Hello everyone. Today I'm going to talk about bringing IoT to sports analytics. And this is a joint work with my colleagues and advisor at University of Illinois, as well as collaborators from Intel. You know, data analytics is impacting a variety of application domains, hardly a secret anymore, and sports is no exception. In fact, it's one of the biggest growing industries, projected to reach $5 billion in the next few years. Multiple research groups and companies like Intel, Nike, and IBM are rapidly growing into this area. MIT's recent sports analytics conference was sold out with thousands of participants. And Hawkeye, a UK-based company, is one of the leaders in this revolution, and they use an elaborate infrastructure of high-speed cameras. As a result, they can track motion of balls, strokes of rackets, and movements of players with very high precision. I'm sure most of you have seen Hawkeye in action, but just in case you haven't, let's take a quick look at this video.
It's on its way. It's got the distance. Referee called for Hawkeye. 8 inches, millimeters.
I have to tell you, if we had Hawkeye in my time, it would save me a lot of frustration.
So these are examples where Hawkeye is being used for making decisions in the game. So needless to emphasize, there's tremendous innovation in sports with a number of applications for analytics. So applications range from making better decisions, providing statistics on TV for entertainment, coaching, strategizing, and injury prediction areas as well. However, there's one problem. The entire technology based on high-speed cameras can be expensive, costing up to $1 million. And that is because in order to see a ball even under occlusions, you need multiple high-speed cameras. They need to be high-speed, high-resolution, and highly sensitive to light. And they need to run high-performance vision algorithms. So what this means is that only elite organizations like the International Cricket Council, Olympics, or the Manchester United are the only ones who can afford this technology. So unfortunately, the high cost barrier leaves a vast majority of amateur world behind, such as college sports, school kids, clubs, and coaching centers who mostly rely on qualitative feedback from their coaches. So even if cost of Hawkeye comes down, there's an overhead associated with setting up the infrastructure, calibrating them, setting up bright lighting conditions, and running high performance vision algorithms that makes them difficult to be used for these kinds of settings. So in this paper, we ask, can we embed IoT devices such as inertial sensors and wireless radios inside balls, rackets, and humans for tracking these various motion primitives? In some context, Hawkeye and Microsoft Kinect have already been solving these motion primitives using technologies such as vision or infrared. But even then, we believe if we bring in IoT-based solutions, that can offer complementary benefits. So in the context of sports, we have been able to embed inertial sensors and wireless radios. These are miniature sensors inside cricket balls for tracking the location and spin. Okay. Our entire cost barrier is only about $60, and we can track the location with an accuracy of 8 centimeters and rotation with an accuracy of 10 degrees. As a comparison, Hawkeye can give you millimeter level accuracy, but still they cannot track the spin. So the core technical approach in solving this is very simple. So we combine diverse pieces of information from multimodal sensory information, wireless and inertial. So these are partial pieces of information because of the high speed motion of the ball and the noise in the data. These are not sufficient, but when you fuse them with physics models of ball motion, we can track a variety of motion tracking primitives that underpin a number of applications that we just discussed. And for the rest of the talk, I'm going to elaborate this approach by walking you through a case study of the game of cricket. So we chose cricket for one main reason. The speed of a ball is very high, and the ball spins at a very high rate. So if you can track a cricket ball, perhaps the techniques are generalizable to other sports as well. And more importantly, the International Cricket Council expressed interest in working with us, an opportunity we did not want to let go. So for the game of cricket, we are interested in tracking spin and the location trajectory. And if you're not familiar with rules of cricket, not a problem. Most of what I'm going to discuss is applicable for baseball or even volleyball. So let's begin with spin. Our platform is based on Intel's IMU sensor and Decawave ultra-wideband radio. IMU is an acronym for inertial measurement unit, consisting of accelerometer, gyroscopes, and magnetometers, the same kind of sensors you find on your smartphones and smartwatches. So together with IMU, the ultra-wideband radio offers a platform that is cheap, small, and power efficient, offering up to 2 hours of battery life today and an ideal platform for experimenting. In fact, we have been working with a design company called D2M on other aspects such as how can you ensure a uniform mass distribution while still having the sensor inside. So the key question then is, how can we use this platform to track the spin of the ball? So in terms of spin, professional sellers, there are three main metrics of interest. A cricket ball has a certain number of stitches around the equator, and the plane formed by these stitches is called a seam, that is one of the metrics. Similarly, the number of revolutions per second and the axis of rotation are other metrics of interest because they control various aerodynamic properties. So tracking all of these metrics boils down to one core problem. What is the 3D orientation of the ball? So if we know that, the rest of the metrics is simply derivatives of that. And the notion of orientation can sometimes be confusing, so let's begin from first principles. Okay? The first thing you would need to measure the orientation of a rigid body is a global frame of reference. Let's use Earth as our frame of reference with up, east, and magnetic north as the coordinate axis. And let's consider a ball in a random orientation and embed the global frame of reference shown in dotted lines here. Let us also consider the local frames of reference shown in solid lines. So these are the ball's own coordinate axis. So clearly these two frames, the local and global frames, need not be aligned with each other. And the amount of misalignment between these two frames of reference, that quantifies the orientation of the ball. And in mathematical terms, you can use a 3x3 rotation matrix to translate a vector from global frame to local frame. So how can we compute this misalignment? The key idea is very simple. You need to know something that satisfies two properties. That you need to know a vector that is known in the global frame and also measurable in the local frame. So gravity is one such example. We know that gravity is pointing vertically downwards in the global frame of reference, and gravity is measurable in the local frame of reference using the accelerometer. Okay? That satisfies these properties. Magnetic north is another example. So let me elaborate what I mean with a simple analogy. Imagine you are sitting in a plane and tilted in a random orientation. You would know that because you wouldn't feel gravity in your vertical direction. Gravity would be in the globally vertical direction. Now, when the plane becomes straight, you again know that because you would feel gravity in your vertical direction. Okay? Now, if the amount of rotation the plane performed in this process is omega, the inverse of that rotation would quantify your misalignment relative to the vertical plane. Now, if you had an accelerometer, you need not wait until the plane to physically rotate, because an accelerometer can measure acceleration due to gravity in the local frame of reference. By looking at the accelerometer measurement, you can immediately say what is your misalignment relative to the vertical plane. Now, if you see that, quantifying your orientation in the horizontal plane is also very similar. You can use your magnetometer or compass to quantify the misalignment relative to the magnetic north, and hence quantify your orientation in the horizontal plane as well. So we wanted to do exactly the same for the ball. Specifically, use the accelerometer to align gravity with the z-axis of the ball and quantify misalignment on the vertical plane. And then we wanted to use the magnetometer to align north with y-axis of the ball and quantify misalignment on the horizontal plane. The hope was that that would give us 3D orientation and hence all spin-based analytics. But unfortunately, this is when we realized that the thunder strikes. So we observed that when the ball is under free fall, these sensors exhibit fundamentally different properties. So, for example, accelerometer cannot measure gravity at all. And here is a demonstration to show that. So the y-axis here is the acceleration output from the sensor embedded ball. So as you can see, as long as the ball is in my hand, the measurement is close to gravity, 9.8 meter per second square. But look what happens when I throw the ball. The measurement quickly drops to zero. The accelerometer experiences weightlessness under free fall, and it cannot measure the reactive force of gravity. So this precludes any opportunity for aligning gravity with z-axis and quantifying the misalignment on the vertical plane. Similarly, gyroscope is another sensor that can measure the number of revolutions per second, and that has a different problem. So the y-axis here is the rotations per second output from the gyroscope, and look what happens when I spin the ball. So a gyroscope measurement saturates at five revolutions per second, and do you know how much a professional spinner can spin at? 40 revolutions per second, and even I can spin at 15, whereas a gyroscope saturates at 5. So the bottom line is that we are only left with magnetometers, and how can we use the magnetometer to serve the purpose of both gyroscope and accelerometer under free fall conditions? Fortunately, the sun came up after the thunder, and what I mean by that is that the same notion of free fall that gave us trouble opened up opportunities as well. So, we observe that when you throw a ball, let's consider a simplistic case. If you throw a ball in vacuum, because there is no external torque acting on the ball, the axis of rotation exhibits limited degrees of freedom. So, it would be a perfect constant. Okay? So, in other words, while the magnetometer measurement gives you under constraint system of equations, the free fall motion also decreases the number of unknowns, and this is the core intuition in solving this problem. So with that, let me begin explaining the solutions under ideal conditions of no wind or aerodynamic effects, and we'll relax the assumptions later. Okay. So observe that when a bowler is throwing a ball, initially the ball is in his hand until the point of release, and finally it's under free fall until it's hit by the batsman. An easier task is to compute the point of release. You can look at the accelerometer measurement. When it drops to zero, you know that the ball has been released. But until then, when the ball is in the hand of the bowler, you can use all of the sensors to measure the orientation, because it's not under free fall, the sensors are still usable. Which means you can compute the orientation at the point of release as well. And finally, when the ball is under free fall, if you can track the axis of rotation of the ball in the local frame of reference, then you can go back in time and use the known orientation at the point of release and compute the axis of rotation in the global frame as well. Okay? In other words, gravity is not a special vector. It satisfies two properties. It was known in the both local and global frame of reference. But you can, if you can estimate the axis of rotation also both in the local and global frames of reference, then we can essentially replace gravity and combine that with magnetic north for computing the 3D orientation. Okay? And easier said than done. The key challenge here is to track the axis of rotation of the ball, and let's jump into that. Okay? So here's a visualization of a spinning ball. The black line is the axis of rotation, and the blue line is the y-axis of the ball, and the dotted blue is the magnetic north. Okay? Clearly, as the ball spins, the y-axis would trace a circle around the axis of rotation. Now let's change the perspective a little bit. Imagine you are inside the ball and observing the spin. What would you perceive? So if you're inside a ball, do you think your y-axis would appear moving to you? No. But what about the magnetic north? Yes. So the magnetic north would appear to trace a circle around the axis of rotation if you're inside a spinning ball. Okay? So in other words, if you look at the center of your magnetometer trace, that will give you the axis of rotation in your local frame of reference. But in reality, because of wind, breeze, and other aerodynamic effects, the same reason why the ball is made to swing, dip, and curve, and phenomenon like knuckleball happens because of this. So it becomes a little complicated. And from a motion tracking perspective, what this manifests into is a time-varying axis of rotation, and this is called as wobble. So here is a quick illustration of wobble, and this is a perfect example of a constant axis of rotation. And here's an example from real data where the axis of rotation is varying with time. And as you can see, the plane formed by the red circle sorted out horizontally, and it gradually became vertical in time. And let's again try to observe this phenomena from inside the ball. How would it look like? So the axis of rotation, which was a constant earlier, would now be a varying function of time. And more importantly, the magnetometer trace, which was a circle around the axis of rotation earlier, has now become a spiral. But more importantly, the instantaneous center of your magnetometer spiral would still point towards the instantaneous axis of rotation. Okay? So one way to track the instantaneous axis of rotation is to track the instantaneous center of your magnetometer trace. However, in reality, because the ball is spinning at a high rate and you have few samples of magnetometer data, such an approach is not feasible. So therefore, we take an alternative approach in which we first model the time-varying axis of rotation as a slowly varying function of time. We specifically use a parabola, but it could be any other slowly varying function of time. So once we have the model of time-varying axis of rotation, we can also develop a model of the time-varying magnetometer trace. So specifically, the model imposes the constraint that the instantaneous angle between the axis of rotation and the magnetic north is a constant. So the other details are not that important, but once we have the model of the magnetometer and the measurement, we try to fit the measurement with the model and extract the best set of model parameters that agree with the measurement. And that gives us a reasonable estimate of the time-varying axis of rotation. Okay. So in sum, while gravity is not available under free fall, we can use estimate based on the rotation axis to replace gravity and combine that with magnetic north to compute the 3D orientation of the ball. So with that, let me quickly talk about the trajectory tracking aspects as well. So there are three key challenges for tracking the location of the ball. So remember, the ball also has an ultra-wideband radio embedded inside. So one possibility to track the location of the ball is to use a number of wireless radios on the ground, which can use time-of-flight measurements for tracking the ball. So if you have a bunch of wireless radios, we can use GPS-like trilateration techniques for tracking the location of the ball. However, in order to have minimum disruptions with the game, such an approach is not affordable. So in the best case, we were allowed to place only two wireless radios on the wickets on either end of the pitch where they could be conveniently placed. Okay. So the bottom line is that we have only two ranging measurements from the ball, and clearly two ranging measurements is inadequate for performing a 3D localization. And besides this, there are other challenges. Because of the high speed motion of the ball, you have sparse sensor data, and the data is inherently noisy. And how can we cope up with these challenges? So let me illustrate the core opportunity. So remember, with one wireless radio, we have a range measurement. So with one range measurement, we can have a sphere of possible ball locations. Okay? So we also have a range measurement from other wireless radio on the other side of the wicket, which gives us another sphere of possible ball locations. Now when we combine the two, the intersection would be a circle, and we would be left with a circle of possible ball locations. Okay? Similarly, at every point on the trajectory, we obtain other circles of possible ball locations. And how can we combine these measurements into an end-to-end estimation of the trajectory? So if we draw a trajectory that passes through all of the circles, that satisfies the measurements very well. However, the ball motion follows well-defined laws of physics. So for the case of cricket, the trajectory can be approximated as a parabola. So, and that is the core intuition. So when we apply the parabolic constraint, then we can work with the under-constraint system of equations and track the 3D location of the ball. So in order to cope up with other challenges based on sparse data and noise, we had to perform optimizations based on MIMO angle of arrival and antenna suppression tricks. We also performed optimizations based on broadcast properties of wireless signals for enhancing the sampling rate. And finally, we inserted all of the information into a nonlinear optimization framework to ultimately track the location trajectory of the ball. So with this, let me quickly discuss the results. So one of the challenges in evaluating the project was to get a reasonable ground truth. Okay. While we struggled with this initially, the robotics lab at UOUC offered us Vicon motion capture system. So we have a lab with 8 infrared cameras placed on the top of ceiling. And using infrared time of flight techniques, we can measure the ground truth with millimeter level accuracy. And for such IR level precision, we had to place multiple infrared markers on the ball. And those infrared cameras on the background can shine infrared light, measure the reflection, and track these individual markers, and convert their individual positions into millimeter level accuracy in estimation of the location and spin. So on this platform, we conducted several experiments at various speed and spin regimes. So clearly, I'm not a professional yet, and I've been able to reach half of the professional speed so far. And we're going to conduct full-fledged experiments very soon. So here's a quick summary of the results. In terms of spin, our median error in tracking the axis of rotation is about 5 degrees. And the median error in tracking the seam plane is about 7 degrees. And the overall 3D orientation error, which is a combination of the two, is about 12 degrees. So we believe these results, if you look at the camera, they can only give you the number of revolutions per second, but not 3D orientation like this, which is suitable for many amateur-based analytics. And in terms of location, we quantify the difference between Vicon estimated ground truth and our own estimations. So in terms of XYZ error, our median error is less than 4 centimeters, and the overall 3D location error is less than 8 centimeters. And as far as the location is concerned, we are not as good as the camera yet, but we believe we have only scratched the surface. There are a number of other opportunities as well. For example, you can incorporate the sensors inside the bat, ball, and humans for jointly estimating the locations of all of them with better accuracy. And we have only considered simple physics here. It's possible to consider physics of both location and spin jointly and impose more constraints to estimate both the location and rotation with better accuracy. So I'll be happy to talk about more of these opportunities later. So I must acknowledge several teams that have helped me in bringing the system together, Intel, DTM, and the International Cricket Council. The robotics laboratory at UIUC let us hijack their space for several weeks for experiments. So I'm happy to report that the International Cricket Council is going to conduct full-fledged experiments very soon on stadiums in England. So with this, let me conclude the talk by, if there's one takeaway message I would like you to give, that would be, you can combine multimodal sensory information from diverse sets of sensors like wireless and inertial. So they're not individually sufficient, but when you combine them with physics models of ball motion, you can track a number of these motion tracking primitives that underpin a variety of these applications that we discussed at the beginning of the talk. Okay. So with this, let me conclude my talk, and I'll be happy to take any more questions.
Hi, Yiming from Tsinghua University, and I really like your work. So I'm wondering, Hawkeye is very expensive, so what's the price of your whole system?
The whole system can cost up to $60.
Oh, so, okay, thank you.
Okay, let me ask something. I'm curious about the reason for the gyroscope capping off at 5. Mm-hmm. You know, it's measuring the Coriolis force, right? So at some level, I'm curious, where the limit lies.
So one of the fundamental properties of the gyroscope, if you draw a graph of the error versus the angular velocity, the curve would be superlinear. So fundamentally, at higher angular velocities, gyroscope error would be very high. And moreover, it is possible to minimize some of these errors by very carefully manufacturing the gyroscope and eliminating some of the impurities that might get incorporated during the manufacturing process. But if you want to do that might decrease the yield rate or increase the manufacturing cost.
Vamsi from University of Washington. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, your physics, is it dependent on like weather conditions and wind and all the other stuff when you model the trajectory of the ball?
Yeah, wind and weather conditions are very much related. But I mean, as long as you can model the parameters associated with these weather conditions in your system, and if you can estimate these model parameters, that would be sufficient for tracking the ball.
So basically, do you have to do this optimization for different days? Or the same model would work irrespective of if the weather conditions and wind changes?
Yeah, the same model would work irrespective of weather conditions.
Thanks.
Rick Farrow, so what do you use for offline processing?
Sorry?
What are you using for processing your data?
What are we using for processing the data?
Yes, you said $60 for the sensors. Well, you're doing a lot of math here, too. So is it just like you're just using a laptop? Can you use a cell phone?
It's a simple Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi, okay. Yeah.
So it's very lightweight computation.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Thanks.
This is not a question, but more a request. Can you ask ICC to start sponsoring NSDI?
Absolutely.
And maybe in the future, submit experience track papers?
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Let me ask one last
one.
The magnetometer, I'm just curious, are there any pathological cases where it aligns with, where the spin angle is aligning with the magnetic north to the point that you're basically getting very limited resolution from the magnetometer?
I see. The spin axis aligned with the magnetic north, right?
Close enough to that, that you're getting very limited information.
Because the magnetometer is rotating, right? So it should still be able to rotate around the spin axis. And as long as you're higher than the Nyquist rate of the spin, it should be able to track the axis of rotation.
All right.
Thank you.